This is episode 85 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with Taz Gray and Long Tran. In this episode, we talk about using Azure AD in conjunction with Office 365 to manage your on-premises and cloud-based identities. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use with your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciaops.com/publications. So just a quick update on a few Office 365 matters before we dive into our podcast. Now, don't forget that always looking for co-presenters and guests to come on the podcast, and they can contact me directly with any suggestions, or perhaps someone that you know wants to come on, or even yourself, so please let me know. Also, don't forget that I also manage a community over at Cloud Business Blueprint, so that's www.cloudbusinessblueprint.com, and that's aimed at resellers and helping them get up to speed with the technical side as well as the business side of a cloud business. Now, some of the big news that's come out since the last podcast has been the release of Office 2016 for Mac. So that brings the Macintosh version of Office up to the same sort of currency as we're seeing with the PC. If you're an Office 365 user, you will have access to that, provided that is in one of your the SKUs. So if you've got a SKU of Office 365 that includes Office on the desktop, you are eligible to download and start using that version of Mac. So the new version of Office 2016 for the Mac, you can download that on your machine today and start using it. So again, coming out for those people in Office 365 before anybody else. The other thing that I will note is that the Skype for Business app for Windows Phone has also been released. This gives it the upgrade from the older Link software, some couple of new features and improvements there. So if you've got a Windows Phone, make sure that you look at getting the Skype for Business app available directly, and we'll put the links to those basically up on the run notes for this episode. Also, don't forget the Skype for Business preview. Basically, what that will give you is access to some of the cloud PABX functionality if you're based in the US. Anywhere else at the moment, the only option we've got is the meeting broadcast, which is some great functionality and will, I think, go head-to-head with GoToMeeting quite significantly. So have a look at that again. Put the links up in the show notes for that. Microsoft has released or made available a new website dedicated to PowerShell for Office 365. You'll find that at powershell.office.com. Great resource to getting started, finding all the links to the software that you need, plus lots of handy scripts to use with Office 365. The final thing I'll mention, obviously, as well, is that Azure AD Connect has gone general availability. I've done a blog post on that, on how to install it, get and configure it. This is software that will be replacing DirSync and Active Directory sync services. So it provides a lot more functionality apart from just pure AD attribute synchronization, but again, that's the default tool for connecting Office 365 identity to on-premise AD going forward. And don't forget that you can always connect with me via my Skype for Business account, admin@ciaops365.com. I always appreciate the iTunes reviews and any feedback you might have around improving or adding to the show. So please let me know if you've got any topics or any guests, your questions or comments. You can send those to me directly via email, director@ciaops.com, or put them on a web contact form, which you'll find at www.ciaops.com/contact. And with that, let's get into the podcast. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. My name is Robert Crane. And for a change, I'm joined by two people this week, Taz and Long. Taz, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be back. It's been quite a while since we've done this.
Yeah, a lot has changed since we've last spoken. So probably what we need to do is for you to obviously introduce yourself again, let people know who you are, what you do, where you come from, and also introduce your colleague there, Long. Let everybody get him to introduce himself and do the same.
Sure thing. So we're well, I'm from Axiom IT. We're a Melbourne-based IT company, and we do a lot of work with Office 365, particularly around migration and then a few other things. So as you mentioned, Long's here with me. Long's my business partner. He's also a bit of an Office 365 guru, but I'll let him introduce himself.
G'day everyone, my name's Long. As Taz said, I'm pretty much the technical side behind our Office 365 offering. So that's what we do here, and we're just here to talk about some of the new stuff we've been doing.
Great.
So do
Okay.
you want to?
Oh, no, that's good. So probably what we need to do is, again, Taz, probably let us know what's the most exciting thing that you've done with the Office 365 space in recent times.
So we've recently developed a web app that we use internally that helps us streamline some of our processes, and we really wanted to, well, I really wanted to play around with integrating authentication in that web app. So in other words, when people log in, that integration into our cloud Active Directory. So basically, what that means for those that don't know is, with most web apps, you've got a separate set of login credentials, and in this case, because we've integrated with Active Directory, it's the same credentials you would use for your normal Office 365 login. So I thought that was pretty cool.
What he actually means is single sign-on. That's the technical term for it.
Well, it's a true single sign-on. Obviously, where's the ADD? What are you doing with your local stuff? Is it dir sync or are you doing the full ADFS?
Long.
Well, we have a dir sync. We're not federated with Office 365, and in today's days and times, I don't think that's really necessary anymore. Dir sync does the password synchronization, and you can sync it up every 4 hours. So it's, I think, well, our belief is dir sync is as far as we need to go.
Okay, so what we're seeing for those who aren't aware is basically there are three models for the cloud, for the identities in Office 365. The first is obviously totally cloud-based, which means that you log into the cloud. Office 365 has the login and the password, and if you log into a local domain, then that's separate. The second one is basically now dir sync, which is the old tool. AD Connect is the new tool that will copy the objects from your local AD up to the cloud, including the password. So it's a one-way copy from your on-premise Active Directory to the Office 365 world. So people can now log in with the same login, but it's again a synchronization process. The third option is the more complex option, which requires ADFS, so Active Directory Federation Services, where basically your local AD becomes the central location for identity, and you're actually logging into your local AD, even though you're accessing Office 365 services. Now, all have their advantages and disadvantages, but the ADFS certainly is more complex, and for a smaller business, probably is not the way to go. And Microsoft's focus now is around the synchronization tool in the middle. So obviously, that's you're taking advantage of that. So, I mean, how long did that application take to get up and running to work all the way through? Was it a complex job to, find all that information?
Not really. So just focusing on the integration with the AD, that wasn't too bad. There's quite a lot of information out there on the web from various developers now. In particular, Scott Hanselman seems to have published quite a bit of content on it. So yeah, I'd say maybe like a day of development effort in order to get that working.
And I mean, I suppose what's the benefit for, the smaller business? I mean, obviously this is something that you've written yourself. How do you see that potentially rolling out to, I mean, obviously it's giving you productivity benefits inside your business, but are you looking to expand that to applications that you would then provide to customers?
Well, so I assume by that you mean if we were developing applications for a customer and then integrating into their ID, is that what you meant?
Well, what I'm saying is you've obviously spent time and effort, spinning up this application, learning the active, learning the integration, and you're using it obviously internally, as you said, with the internal app. Now, I suppose where do you see it going from here? Are you looking to develop potentially a commercial product, or are you just going to keep using it internally? How are you going to, you know, what's the future?
At this stage, we're using it internally, but you know, as is often the case, these things start internal, and then there is a business case to then go and sell that on to other businesses. But at this stage, I don't think that's what we're focused on. But from my point of view, I just thought it would be really great to try and, or it was a great opportunity to learn how to integrate an app with the Azure AD. And I've noticed that a lot of other apps allow you to do that too, things like Dropbox for Business. And obviously the benefit of doing this is that you sort of get that single sign-on experience. So from a user's point of view, less credentials to remember, which I think is always a good thing.
Well, I think that, again, you know, there's an interesting, you know, I suppose, path for a lot of people is that certainly the big trend is away from having on-premise Active Directory. Basically, the trend is to move away from having on-premise anything. A lot of customers, especially smaller customers, want to basically, you know, have all their servers, all their equipment in the cloud, and that's certainly, you know, possible to do more so now. But again, one of the big challenges has always been identity. And as you say, every Office 365 tenant comes with an Azure Active Directory. You also get the ability to log into Azure. So one of the options in the portal for Office 365 is Azure AD. So you can log into the AD and look at your directory and you know, make commands and get extra features and functionality against it. And one of those is a built-in single sign-in portal, web portal, that you can configure for your tenant. But again, the point is obviously you're extending it and using that. So again, I think we're seeing the growth of that Azure Active Directory is an important component, and especially when you look at the fact now that with Windows 10 due shortly, that will allow you to log in to domain join directly to Azure AD without having to do anything on-premise. So you can have a machine, fire it up, connect to Azure AD in the cloud, and then you get all the benefits of a directory server. So, I mean, that's pretty big news.
Yeah, and that's actually something I wasn't aware of, but I know Long's been playing with that single, well, that dashboard, if you like, with the applications quite a bit. So I think it's something that he could talk a bit more about right now.
Certainly. It's been an interesting learning curve, actually. Going from, you know, the local AD to moving our sign-on to the cloud environment. Obviously, there are limitations. However, all our cloud apps are now up in our, you know, Azure AD dashboard. So anything I need to do literally is a single click away from our dashboard. So we've got, you know, our Dropbox integrated, our Office 365, our developed app, and all of our other tools that we use. So Web Host Manager, for instance, or even Skykick sign-ins on there. So all their tools are now on our Azure dashboard.
And I think one of the big things that, you know, the benefits I see and the benefits I've integrated with clients along the same lines is that, let's take, for example, Facebook. So let's say that you're a small business, you've got one Facebook account, you log into that to send out your social signals. Now, if you're allowing employees to use that Facebook account, when that employee leaves, best policy is you change that password so they can no longer get access because they aren't part of the business. Now, again, that can be quite time consuming, but if you actually put that Facebook app inside this single sign-on portal, when the employee signs in to use Facebook, they're actually using their Office 365 login via this portal you've set up, and then when they click on it, Facebook already comes up. They don't actually put a login and a password in to access Facebook or Dropbox or whatever. Then that means that they have no concept of what the login actually is to Facebook because that's configured in the background. When they leave, you disable their Office 365 account and they can no longer get access to those web apps. And so that's the first benefit. I think also what it's beginning to see in Office 365 and this Azure single sign-on is the ability to do analytics. So you can start looking at how often people access it, when they access, putting policies on it, getting reports. And again, with the growth of web apps, it's so easy for employees just to sign up for some web app without your knowledge and then start using it. So this is also a good way to sort of keep on top of that. I mean, are you rolling this sort of thing out to clients as well?
Well, we are actually trying to. I mean, looking at what we can do in terms of, I guess, monetizing this identity in the cloud. We haven't really wrapped a service or a product around it yet, but it's something we're looking to do in the future, certainly.
So one of the business models that's put forward is what you can do is you could, for example, go to a client and say, for an extra, you know, whatever, $10, $20 a month, we can, you know, create a single sign-on portal for you. We can manage it. We can maintain it. We can configure it. So you just tell us what web apps you want built into it. We will configure that, and you pay a monthly service for us to maintain that for your users. So that's also potentially a way that you could monetize it. But I think, again, it's part of getting the users to understand the benefits of the portal and how that single sign-on can make their lives easier. And again, that I think that's going to come for sure.
Yeah, so Robert, are you having that conversation with any clients at this point in time, or have you rolled it out?
Yeah, I'm definitely rolling it out on a regular basis, especially when you go in there and you see them doing, you know, multiple web apps. So typically, you know, these days you see their accounting software is in the cloud. They may have another one we've worked with is they have, you know, resume. So when people send them resumes, there's a, you know, a web app that manages that. So again, it's just a matter of understanding. Now, what I'm finding is that the single sign-on portal that comes with Office 365 does have a limit of 10 apps, I believe. So that's the maximum amount of apps you can put in that single sign-on without having to go to Azure Active Directory Premium. Which is a bit of a step up. But it seems to me as though it's certainly the Office 365 and the Azure Active Directory free option that comes with Office 365 is great, fantastic, a great stepping stone. But I'm now finding that a lot of businesses are exceeding that capability and are looking to Azure Active Directory Premium. Have you guys had a look at that or are looking that way perhaps?
Oh, I haven't had a look, but I've got a feeling Long might have.
Yeah, I had a quick play with it. It does do some very good things, like you can obviously customize your sign-in page and, you know, set up multi-factor authentication, which is important for some businesses. So it could be worth the price.
Well, and just on that, Robert, I don't actually know the pricing. Do you happen to know what it is?
No, because at the moment, the way that you get the Azure Active Directory Premium for it, typically an SMB, is through the Enterprise Mobility Suite, the EMS. So you buy the Enterprise Mobility Suite, which you buy under open licensing, and then that gives you things like Intune, Advanced Mobile Management, plus it gives you Azure Active Directory Premium.
Okay, so there's no option to go through if you were signed up via T Suite, for example, or even direct billing through Microsoft. That option's not there yet. Have I understood that correctly?
No. Well, what it is that when you get Azure Active Directory through Office 365, you get a basic Azure Active Directory tenant, which just gives you a directory. Okay. Now, if you want to light up, for example, virtual machines, networking, DNS, you know, routing, all that sort of stuff, then you would need to add a standard Azure subscription to that Office 365 one. So you get the free tools.
Of course.
And then you'd have to add the normal Azure one on top of that. Now, normally the Azure one is purchased either via credit card or via tokens from Open. Then, again, if you wanted the Azure Active Directory Premium, which again is a premium feature, you would have to, again, typically include that in an Open licensing agreement or, for example, get the EMS suite.
That makes sense.
Now, sorry, the other thing I would tell you is the ability to customize the Office 365 login and do a web-based user self-service password reset portal, you can do, that's included with the Office 365 Azure AD you can get. So you can customize your the picture on the left when you log into Office 365 and the logo directly in Azure AD that you get free with Office 365.
Is that a recent change? Because I know you couldn't do that in the past.
It's been changed probably about since May. I think May or April that has changed. They've brought those features down to the free version. And what I'm seeing is more and more AD premium features migrate down to the free version of Office 365. So one of the advantages that the premium gives you that, again, I think is very, very, it's probably worth the money, apart from the other things Long's mentioned, is password write-back. Okay, so what you're able to do with Azure AD Connect, the latest version of DirSync, and Azure AD Premium is actually write the password back to your local AD. So it synchronizes up as it always has, one way to Office 365. But if you have Azure AD Premium, then if you change the password in the cloud or on your device or whatever, it will then synchronize that password back to your Azure, to your local AD. So again, that's actually great news. and that's supported, but at the moment, that's an Azure AD Premium feature. Okay, now what I see is that my guess is that feature will come into the free version, because then that really makes the DirSync or the synchronization thing extremely powerful and really alleviates, I think, the need for ADFS. So if you've got a synchronization server that can synchronize passwords up to the cloud as well as synchronize them back from the cloud, I think that covers a lot of bases.
Definitely. So you mentioned earlier as well with Windows 10, Robert, that the Active Directory all sort of seamlessly integrates. What about things like group policy and
I think a lot of it is we're still early days, right? So Azure Active Directory is not AD. It's not the same as local AD at this point in time. Okay, so some of the features that it did lack was traditionally you couldn't join a workstation directly to Azure AD. You could join it to a local Active Directory, but you couldn't join it directly to Azure AD in the cloud. Now, with Windows 10 and going forward, that's now changed. So that means that a Windows 10 machine can domain join directly to an Azure AD, which, again, is pointing to alleviating the need to have a local AD server. Now, again, one of the other big advantages from an IT pro's point of view is the fact that you can do group policy. That allows you to push out policies on your workstation to control passwords, logins, all sorts of fun things, Office, that sort of stuff. Now, that currently isn't available in Azure AD in the cloud. That's typically provided by Windows Intune. So the Windows Intune is an add-on component that would allow you to do group policy-like stuff through the cloud. Now, that's because Azure AD in the cloud doesn't support group policy. But my gut feeling is, once you get a domain join Windows machine to a cloud-based Active Directory, yes, we're going to eventually see some form of group policy being available from Azure AD that you'll be able to push down and control things like Windows 10 machines.
That'll be interesting, because that's obviously the last piece of the puzzle, really, in terms of a small business. If they want that control over the local network, they still need that Active Directory.
Well, I think what we're seeing is, again, there's once you start aggregating things like Exchange, SharePoint, and now AD, you're able to potentially, you can build a lot of features, a lot of facilities, and do nearly everything that you did on-prem, but in a shared server. So I'm certainly confident that we're going to see a lot of those sort of properties roll out. Now, again, it's not just a simple thing when you think about it, because you've got machines roaming around on different connections, and, you know, when do they authenticate? How do they check the AD? Because typically a local AD, they're always connected. You turn the desktop on and it's on and it, you know, gets the machine. So there are some challenges there. But I think longer term, the what's going to drive this is the Internet of Things. We're going to have billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of lots of little devices that are going to connect and feed data basically back into the cloud so you can run analytics. Now, the way that we're going to secure those probably is with an AD, with Active Directory. So they would log into your Azure AD. They will be authenticated. They would be encrypted. They would send the information to your local data source. So I certainly see that the growth of the Internet of Things is going to drive this, Azure AD and the group policy and all the things we're used to on-premise, definitely into the cloud.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, there's no doubt it's heading that way. It's just really it's the technology that's sort of behind at the moment. Wouldn't you agree with that, Robert?
Well, I don't think it's the technology that is behind. I think that, again, it's a very complex thing, because Microsoft obviously has to create a cloud-based technology that is going to suit the majority of its users. Now, at one end, you've got the enterprise with 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 servers. And at the other end, you've got a small business with potentially one server or no server. So you've got to craft something and have plans and that suits everybody. Now, again, I think that one of the trends I talk to IT pros about is unfortunately, there really isn't a lot of small business offerings these days. You know, like the traditional small business server with a wizard and all that. We're basically seeing a move to an enterprise-style world, which gives you more control, which has more functionality. But as an IT pro, you need to know where all the buttons are. You need to know where all the options are to manage this sort of stuff. Because again, it's gone back to basically being, managing large environments. And certainly, you can optimize that with things like, PowerShell and other third-party tools that are now coming on board. But that's very much the message. It really does require a broader band of knowledge. So again, in the SBS terms, is if you just use the wizards and only knew the wizards, you really need now to know what the wizards are doing underneath the covers to be comfortable, I think, in this new world that we're moving towards.
I definitely agree with that. Knowledge of PowerShell in particular is something that, I don't think you could live without in this day and age.
Well, I think a lot of people seem to live without it, from as far as I've seen. But
I'd like to know how they're doing it.
they're doing 10 times the amount of work that you and I are doing. But what I'll also point out is that Microsoft have just opened a new site. So the new site they've made available is called powershell.office.com. And this is a dedicated PowerShell for Office 365 site. Makes it really easy, shows you basically how to get started, where to download the modules, how to install them, and then most importantly, it gives you scripts. So there's probably, I think, 100 odd scripts in there that show you how to manage your Skype for Business, how to connect to, export users into a CSV file. So we expect to see this site grow more and more and more. So again, if you're not into PowerShell, certainly do that, powershell.office.com. And I myself have an ebook for $5 that'll get you up and started, which has it in nice. So I recommend people have a look at that at my publications page. But again, I think you're right. I think the importance of PowerShell, you don't need to be an expert. You just need to have some basic understanding of how it works. Copy and paste is always your friend. But once you've done a script, then it is yours for life. So a script I had to do recently was basically a customer has one domain, they've gone out and bought a second domain. How do you go and change the primary email domain for every user in that tenant? There's 70, 80 users using PowerShell. So again, you could go into the console and go into each user and add the email address, but with PowerShell, you just set up a loop and bang, it's done. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's the advantage.
Just on that, Robert, as well, there is another website which is a great resource for PowerShell scripts, which is 0365info.com. I know in the past I've utilized that quite a bit too.
Yeah, that's another great site. The other one is there's also TechNet Script Center. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
So the TechNet Script Center basically has PowerShell scripts for everything, for servers, for workstations, for SQL. And again, one of the options in there is Office 365. So again, the TechNet Script Center is another great place to basically go copy and paste and make some modifications and get the scripts that you want. So one of the scripts that I took and modified was the ability to go in and look at people's OneDrives, also to auto-provision OneDrives for within Office 365. So in Office 365, the OneDrive for Business for a client doesn't get provisioned until the user actually goes into it and clicks on it and takes a few minutes for it to provision. You can run this PowerShell script that'll go out and automatically provision all the users so they just go straight in there when they visit it.
So Robert, we tend to use a mix of PowerShell and GUI depending on the complexity of the task. Where do you sort of sit on that? Are you exclusive? PowerShell?
Well, I think the issue is I'm not really interested in doing the Exchange stuff. You know, mailboxes to me and migrations and that sort of stuff. The two comments I make there is, A, it's becoming a commodity. Everybody's driving the price down. Third-party people are going to be able to do it for free. For example, Microsoft offers a free service to do mailbox migrations, provided it's over 150 seats. But the trend in the email migration is, one is, it's going to a commodity, so it's going to effectively be free. The second thing is there's going to be a limit. You know, once the inboxes are migrated to Office 365 or cloud-based web, no more migrations. So again, sure. The real value is that in Exchange is adding things like legal hold, e-discovery, shared mail, managing all those sort of things, which I don't see a lot of people doing. That is perfect for scripting. So for example, If you want to, for example, enhance the malware protection or the content filtering in Office 365, most people, again, they accept the defaults. And then if they get problems, they complain that, oh, it's not doing what it's wanting. Okay, well, have you gone in and have you tweaked it? And as you would do with any other system you've worked with. And they say, oh, no, we haven't. So again, what you need to do is you need to go through all the compliance options, malware, spam, filtering, all that sort of stuff in Office 365, work out the options there, and then come up with the ones that work best for your business or the customer, and then just script the whole thing. So then when you come to the next customer, you just push a button, and that whole configuration that you've set up to get the most optimal use of that protection applies to the next customer. What I see is so many resellers going in and just doing random, either doing nothing, accepting the defaults, or doing random configurations, clicking a few buttons and, okay, it's better now, I have no idea what I did. So that's where scripting can come in. If you want a consistent result every time, that's where you want to run. And where I use a lot of scripts is for, especially for discovery. So if you go in and pick up a new client who's Office 365, you have to do a sort of a discovery like you did on premises. How do you do that? You typically run a scripting tool, on premise, and that gives you all that information. PowerShell can do the same thing. Where PowerShell at the moment is a bit limited is in things like SharePoint. So in SharePoint, what we need to do is PowerShell will get us basically to the admin of the site, but then we need to use what's called CSOM, so client-side object modeling, to be able to actually reach inside the SharePoint sites and manipulate libraries and all those sort of things. So again, the PowerShell in the cloud is improving. It's certainly the tool to use, but I don't think you can use it exclusively. And things like Yammer, for example, aren't PowerShell enabled as yet. So they've still got a ways to go. But where I would say it's absolutely crucial is when it is all about doing things repetitively. That's where you're really going to see benefits. And that's how people like Skykick, Migration Wiz, all those sort of guys are using PowerShell at the back end to do stuff repetitively and consistently.
Yeah, no doubt. And within our business, we've started to build up quite a good collection of PowerShell scripts that we're able to reuse quite easily. So it does make it quite easy to do those repetitive tasks and in a very efficient way that still allows you to charge potentially more for something that you can do in less time, which from a business point of view is fantastic.
Well, I think also too, the big point is it gives you a consistent result. So if you run this script, you get this result. If a low level one tech runs it, they should get the same result. And that's again the smart way to do things. And that's how a lot of the other automation tools work in the back end. And I think that, there are always going to be certain things that can only be done in PowerShell, and there are a lot of things that can be done much more efficiently. But unfortunately, again, people look at it and they shy away from it. It's not a case where you have to suddenly write a 3,000 line script to do something. You can start off with two or three lines and build it out from there. And as you said, most PowerShell experts I know, the first thing they learn is copy and paste, so Control C, Control V, and then they use the script and they just expand it from there. So you don't need to be an expert, but like with many things in Office 365, you need to have some understanding of what's going on.
Definitely. No, I think getting started is like you say, probably the hardest part. Once you get familiar with it, it's actually quite easy. And I was mentioned to you earlier, we recently completed the exams, and there is quite a bit of information or quite a few questions, I should say, in the exam about PowerShell. So potentially, if you don't know about it, that's not a bad way to sort of get an introduction to it.
It's certainly the case with those exams, the 7346 and the 7347, that PowerShell is featured heavily. And the reason is, as an administrator, you really need to know how to use PowerShell, understand what it does. And it doesn't, again, it's not there to trip you up. It's to make sure that you do have those skills because, they are critical for doing doing a lot of things. And the other thing, too, in all of this that we're talking about is don't forget that PowerShell also applies to Azure as well. So if I want to spin up a virtual machine, I can do it with PowerShell. If I want to shut down all my virtual machines in one hit, I can run a PowerShell script. And the good thing about Azure allows you to create things called runbooks. So runbooks are basically allow you to run PowerShell scripts at an automated time throughout the day. So again, we're talking about, for example, you know, people say, well, why would I run a virtual machine in Azure? You could say, well, you know, if you don't really need it on a weekend, we can run a script so that Friday at 6 p.m. it shuts that server down and then powers it up at 5 o'clock in the morning on Monday morning. So again, there's, I'm not saying everybody would necessarily take that option, but again, that's the sort of flexibility you can have in this new environment.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
So those exams, how did you find them? What sort of, how much prep did you put into them? You know, what was you, were you surprised? Were they what you expected?
Yeah, look, I might let Long answer that one.
No, that was exactly what we expected from a typical Microsoft exam. So realistically, because of, you know, all our past experience with Office 365, I'd probably put in a good solid 2 days worth of study to prep myself for it. I believe TAS would have say about the same.
And what Robert, you go.
No, no, I was going to say that, you know, what sort of materials did you need to learn? I mean, you've obviously got your own skills and knowledge. I mean, where did you sort of go and look for that, you know, that final bit of knowledge, or to, was it just Microsoft websites, or did you, was there some other tool?
Yeah, Microsoft give you, or point you in the right direction and give you access, you know, or they tell you where to look basically and what information you need to cover. There are some exam resources out there that we utilize as well. They give you a bit of a heads up as to what to expect.
So one of the things that I've done too for people is I do have some exam resources. I created a OneNote and I break the sections up and I have different questions and links to the important stuff, again, within the Office 365. So again, it's not super comprehensive, but again, it's part of one of the, some of the packages that I do sell. So I have an Office 365 bootcamp package, as well as a Getting Started with Azure package in my publications, and those exam notes are part of that. So again, I think that, I said, the biggest problem is, would you agree, is that the information is out there, but just trying to pull it together in one location can be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. And had I known about that information, I probably would have got it. So too late now, but good to know about. Yeah, no, definitely trying to work out what you need to know and where to find that info can be time consuming. So if it's all consolidated in one place, it certainly makes that a more efficient process.
And that's certainly been my, the and when I did the exams, that was my whole idea is, okay, this is great, but you know, I need to pull this information together. And if I need to look up ADFS and if I need to find these links, and I can put some questions in there that give you some idea of what they may be like on the Microsoft exam. So again, the idea is that the information is out there, but in typical enterprise fashion, it's spread over multi-locations because people, you know, either exchange wonks or they're SharePoint people, or they, you know, live in their own little silo a bit. So again, one of the challenges with Office 365 and the exams, I think, again, you'd probably agree, is you have to have knowledge across SharePoint, Exchange, Skype, PowerShell, admin, AD style, you, all that sort of stuff is a fair breadth of knowledge.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but I mean, that's the reality of Office 365 as well. So it's worth doing because it actually, I find it's a great way to learn about things that you wouldn't have otherwise known about.
It certainly forces you to, you know, learn the full range of topics. I mean, you may never ever do ADFS, but it does force you to at least understand the concept, follow through, and be able to answer questions on it. And again, that gives you a much better understanding. And I think that again is one of the things that's missing in the IT world, in the Office 365 IT Pro world, especially in the SMB side, that we're facing is people just don't have that basic knowledge for whatever reason. And again, they're going out there, supporting them, installing them, and potentially making a lot of mistakes that, again, are going to get clients very annoyed.
Yeah, no, it's, well, it's still, I guess it's still very new to a lot of people. So, and it continues to evolve and change, which sort of adds to the complexity. So I can understand why, you know, people would find it overwhelming, but yeah, do the exams is my advice because you'll get a greater insight into what you can and can't do. And, I think that's tremendously valuable.
Well, I think that, again, you know, we're beginning to see this breadth. So, you know, what we're expecting to see probably is those exams will be refreshed. You'll need to, you know, recertify them again in a period of time. So it's not going to be something that you'll keep forever. You'll need to obviously recertify when the new features come out. So, again, that's the nature of the beast. We're seeing, for example, something like Delve coming into Office 365, which is changing the aspect. We're seeing Yammer come into it again. And it's like, okay, well, you know, how do you, we're going to have to start having exams for setting up Yammer, for using Delve, for you know, things like the Office 365 store, you know, all this sort of stuff's coming along. So I think that the secret is that's a great base to work with, but the secret is, I think, is that you've really got to get into it and keep moving forward, because again, it's something that's constantly changing.
Yeah, it just changes so quickly that it's really hard to sort of, I think it's near impossible to stay on top of, unless you, I'm sure you're doing a pretty good job of it, Robert, but I know it's a very time consuming exercise, and it's an exciting place to be.
Well, I think the secret to it is what I tell people who would make that statement to me. I think the secret of success is to do less. What I mean is that if you're a traditional, you know, provider and doing on premise, and then you want to, you know, do the cloud stuff, well, if you take on the cloud stuff, that's extra work. If your dance card is already full, you're going to have to get rid of something, and that means some tough decisions. So for me, like I said, the decision I made was to go, you know, basically all cloud and not focus on the on-premise, not focus on the servers. Still got some knowledge there, but I don't certainly focus on that at all. So again, it's really about, you know, becoming a specialist, or again, limiting your vision and knowing that really, really well. And then once you've got that, the secret then is to network with your peers and to find people to fill in the gaps that you haven't got, so that, for example, if a CRM opportunity comes along, you've already got a relationship with someone who's doing CRM, and you can confidently recommend them into a business, and everybody makes money and the client gets the end result. So what I'm seeing generally, unfortunately, is the trend is in the old world of doing IT is we have to do it all. You know, we have to do phones, we have to do on-premise, we have to do accounting systems, we have to do development, we have to do cloud. And at some point, it pushes you beyond a breaking point, and you end up doing everything much worse.
But I would argue, though, on that the decision that you made to go become cloud-focused is something that if you don't consciously make that decision, you're going to get forced into it at some point. So that's purely my opinion, and but I think that, yeah, if you're not getting a jump on it, you're going to end up well behind. And this thing, in sort of the 2-3 years we've looked at it, has just changed so dramatically. I can't imagine what it's going to be like in another year, because it seems to gather momentum too. So,
well, it's interesting. Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is, I mean, to me, a good microcosm of this potentially is Yammer, right? So when you set up Yammer for a client, basically all you do is you turn it on. As a technical person, mm-hmm. you just turn it on, and the people log in and they go berserk. They do whatever they want. There's no real configuration. There's no real tweaking. There's no real optimization. As an IT pro who's used to running a console screen at the background, doesn't exist anymore. So that's what the services are moving towards. It's a case of you just enable them as an IT pro, and that's it. Where the opportunity is in the business services, in the consulting, is helping the people actually make the most out of Yammer, make the most out of SharePoint. And I see that if your world is revolving around you twisting the knobs and trying to, you know what, there's less and less knobs every day. It's being more and more automated, and because that's the way the trend is, and it's becoming simpler at a back end to manage where the people need help and where the consulting opportunities are typically around the implementation, the ongoing, you know, training and that sort of thing. And Yammer is a very, very good example that I've seen of that. Is that, again, you just turn it on, and most people will then, you know, what do I do now as an IT pro? Well, again, that's where you need to upskill and actually use the product so you can help the client get the most out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I know we've talked about that in the past, but I see the technical skills are still required for certain things, because, you know, I mean, there's always going to be that support, but you definitely, you know, on the money, I think, in terms of the consulting side of things, and really developing a deep understanding of how that organization operates so that you can make the right recommendations and help them to utilize it so they get the most value.
Well, I think the thing is, what I'm saying is the technical stuff, is about, you know, you've got to, if you're just doing exchange migrations and basically moving email box from on-prem to somewhere else and providing no other add value add, like, you know, e-discovery configuration, legal hold, all the advanced options like DLP and rights management with Exchange or encrypted messages, what value are you adding? What value are you adding that a machine or a PowerShell script or something else or a third-party automation tool can't do? So what I'm saying is that, you know, even those basic, what I'm seeing is, unfortunately, is most traditional, you know, SMB IT providers are doing the absolute minimum. They're not actually using the opportunities that are there because they're not upskilling themselves to get into this world where they can provide a huge amount of value. So imagine if you went to a business and say, right, we've migrated your emails. Now, how would you like, you know, your environment configured? Please check all these boxes and let us know. And then you just go and run a PowerShell script that configures that the way they want. And then you can charge for that as a service. I'm not seeing that. So again, what that means is that someone else could come in and say, oh, this is not configured right. And we can manage this and do, you know, optimize and do all this sort of stuff. So again, what I'm seeing, unfortunately, is just people accepting the default.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that will be, I think you're right. I think the next opportunity is in figuring out, you're almost sort of cookie cuttering the setup of the environment, because I think in SMB you have to do that to a certain extent. But yeah, those features that you mentioned, like DLP and rights management, if you can come up with some good one size fits all sort of solutions where you can customize a little bit and then, like you said, script it all out, I think that is a great way to make money, because you look good to the client, and you can automate a lot of it, which
the risk you run is if you don't value add, go above and beyond what an automated tool can do, then, you know, a lot of people at the clients thing can actually do that themselves. There's enough IT skill in general out there for a lot of clients to be able to get through it themselves using these automated tools. So, that's part of what we talked about, is looking at the whole range of the Office 365 product.
Exactly. But the challenge right now, in my mind, is still getting people onto the platform. And then I don't think anyone's really invested, this is what you're saying exactly, is that no one's invested the time into what's next. And I think that that's because we haven't reached that point yet, but I don't think it's far away. And that's obviously one thing we're trying to figure out in our business is, where we know where the opportunity lies, we just don't know really what it looks like. And it's a case of trial and error at this point to really get something that is going to work and that we can repeat over and over again.
Well, I think, so again, a lot of it, again, the unfortunately, like I said, that technical thing that you've done over and over again is just going to get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Without a doubt.
And the consultants being like what you're doing in the software world, and that's what I've, you know, the presentations I've given and one I gave recently with Carl, basically said, look, you know, the Mark Andreessen quote, you know, software is going to eat the world. It's all about understanding how to write code. You really do need, at some point, to be able to write apps like you're doing, use PowerShell, that sort of stuff. That's where it's going. That's where the skill set is moving.
Yeah, definitely. I get the feeling that Microsoft is sort of pushing people in that direction too, because they keep talking about find a vertical, develop a solution, whether, you know, and they're talking about even basic things like Power BI dashboards that can give businesses in a particular vertical insights into things that they can't get easily right now, and which to me sounds like development in a lot of ways, if it is.
Let me ask you a question. This is another question I ask the IT pros. I'll put you on the spot here. Again, Power BI requires knowledge of just basic Excel, right? Now, my question to you is, and I ask all the IT pros this, and I can tell you nobody puts their hands up, but do you know, for example, in Excel, Power Pivot, Power Query, Pivot Tables, have you used any of those sort of technologies?
Not myself. Not for a long time.
To illustrate here is that a basic product like Excel, right, that's been around for years, that is on every desktop, has these fantastic data analysis tools in which that most customers haven't had the experience. Now, if you were to skill yourself up in using Power Pivot, using Power Query, and again, that's a service that you can sell with a little bit of knowledge invested in using Excel, because Excel, again, has got macros in the background, has got all this power to pull data from multiple sources, and now can be published into Power BI and a Surface through SharePoint. So again, the important thing here that I'm trying to illustrate is that even basic tools like the Word and the Office and the documents have this a huge amount of power to create solutions for clients that I see so many people just overlooking.
Yeah, but that's the message coming out of Microsoft that I'm hearing is that, you know, look to how you can do that, but there's no value in going out and doing that for one customer unless they're happy to pay you to consult for all that time. Would you agree with that?
I think the thing is again, you've got to build up your skill set, and every client is slightly different, but you certainly, like any developer, you have a base set of tools or scripts that will do the majority of stuff. But
sure. What
I'm finding, especially in the SMB space, is every client has slightly different requirements and slightly different interfacing requirements, like the single sign-on portal in Azure. You know, we all know how to put the icons in, we all know how to set that all up, but when you actually go to do it, it's going to be a different set of icons. So again, there's going to be a base level stuff which you can resell, but then there's going to be the customization option. And the reality is that I think in business going forward, it's not going to be the same as it used to be. There has to be this customization, there has to be this consulting, there has to be this, you know, this mushy bit that's very hard to define and potentially difficult to automate. But on the other side of the coin is that's also where there's a huge amount of value, because again, if you become the expert in, say, Power BI, then you can resell that potentially to all the other resellers who don't want to get into Power BI.
Definitely. But if what sort of, I guess what I'm thinking is that if you don't do that, the opportunity to do the techie stuff, as you say, is becoming smaller and smaller. So I kind of feel like if you don't do that, you're going to struggle in the future to survive. And you've really got to find some sort of problem that's, I guess, common to a large group of businesses, and go out and solve that, try to solve that, whether it's with Power BI or a custom web app or whatever, I don't know. But that to me seems like the best strategy moving forward. Obviously, you're still going to need some of that tech, some of that support. That's never going to go away entirely. But if you can sort of marry the two together, I think you're going to have a very strong business.
Well, I think, again, that's the secret. It's the new world is different. You don't throw away what you keep the best of what you've learned, and you utilize that, but you're going to have to incorporate new skills like PowerShell, Power BI, some of the stuff in Office. And again, the transition is going to be a bit different because, again, it's not necessarily as cut and dry, and you can't, you know, it's going to be project-based rather than ticket or incident-based. So I think that's, again, the change we're seeing. And the sooner that people look at that and move forward and, again, I suppose, accept the differences. And the way I point to it, again, is that one of the other things I ask people is that you can tell your digital age, and I say the way you tell that is you tell me the first thing that you looked at today. Did you look at your emails? If you looked at your emails as the first thing, you're old world. If you, however, looked at a social networking first, then you're, again, on the fast track with technology. So, again, these sort of tools are very different from the ones people are used to and require a different mindset and also being comfortable with a different way that they're set up, utilized, and potentially optimized within a business.
Definitely. No, it's forever changing, and don't know. Yeah, there's plenty of opportunity out there as a result of that, and I don't think anyone, we can guess, you know, how the future's going to look, but I don't think anyone really knows. It hasn't shaken out yet, and I still think that's going to happen over the next couple of years. So,
cool.
Yeah,
well, I think we're
supposed to be.
It is. I mean, that's the great. There's more opportunity, I think, than there are, and again, it's just a matter of looking at, I think there's more choice now, which is fantastic. So what we probably need to do is to bring this to a closure. What I'll get, obviously, maybe Taz and Long, who's been a little bit quiet there in the background, I know. Do you want to give us a bit of a summary or a bit of a thing that, you know, as resellers, they could focus on what they should look at, where they should get started with some of the stuff you spoke about? So can you give us that? And then can you also let us know how people can get in contact with you, follow what you're doing? And again, if they're interested in those apps that you've developed or getting more information, how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to let Long field this because he hasn't talked for a while.
Right. Well, to wrap up, so I guess we've covered a fair bit of ground here. In terms of what we've done, we've used, you know, Office 365 as this platform to build out extra web apps, taking advantage of the Azure AD in the background. And then we've kind of covered, you know, the business case for this. So where can we make money with this? So how are we going to provide this, you know, new service, so this identity stuff to our clients. And then we've, I guess, through the podcast, we've also talked about, you know, where business is heading. So, and mentioned very heavily about how we can become the, you know, business consultant and wrap the technology around that rather than be the technology expert and try to, you know, shoehorn the technology to the business. I mean, that's kind of... go ahead.
I was going to say, and I think we can have a drinking game. For every time that we've mentioned Azure AD, everybody should have a drink, I think.
Some very drunk people.
Yeah, exactly. So how can everybody get in contact with you and follow what you're doing or ask you questions specifically about what you guys been able to achieve?
Well, they can obviously check out our website, which is Axiom IT. It's axiomit.com.au. We do have a Twitter feed, and you can follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn. We're probably not as active there as we should be, but that's on the cards. We're looking to address that. So yeah, but if they wanted to talk to us personally, they can obviously email us long at axiomit and tas@axiomit. Happy to answer any questions people have got if they're looking at, you know, what to do in their business and that kind of thing. You know, always interested in speaking to other business owners and finding out what they're doing and sharing our thoughts on what we think's working and what's not. And yeah, get in touch.
All right. Well, I'll thank both gentlemen for their time today. Obviously, sharing some information there, especially around the Azure AD stuff, which I think is fantastic. Great opportunity. If you haven't dug into that, do that as part of Office 365. Have a look at the single sign-on portal. I've got a number of blog posts on that, as well as customizing and branding the portal from the Azure AD. I have a number of products, like we've mentioned, is the Exam Cram, the Getting Started with Azure, and the Office 365 Bootcamp notes. You'll find those at my website, ciaops.com. If you want to get in contact with me, you can do so on the Twitter, @DirectorCIA. Of course, you can send emails to director@ciaops. I thank everybody once again for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast. You've been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.